Now I have the opportunity to introduce someone that we've known each other for a long time, from Springfield, Missouri. Her mom was active down there. I was down there, and so we got to know each other quite well. When we both were the Young Turks in the legislature, I was asked to be chairman of the General Administration Appropriation Committee, and Claire was my vice chair. And we took on some shenanigans that were going on in Jefferson City, and I had some Democratic state senators stand up in the Senate and say that I just ended my career because I mistreated the Attorney General of Missouri and the ethics that was going on. Well, it didn't end my career, it only started my career. And the person that was with me every step of the way and all of that was our United States Senator from Missouri, Claire McCaskill. Claire is truly someone that will work every single day, every hour of the day, to make sure that the people that don't have a big voice in Washington or Jefferson City is well represented. And that's the type of individual that we need. She's out there working on behalf of the veterans, against sex trafficking, health care, education, all of the other issues that we all know are so very, very important. And to say that Claire doesn't work hard is an understatement, because Claire works hard and is tenacious every single day, whether she be in Washington, D.C., or the state of Missouri. She's held over 50 town hall meetings in the last 6-7 months of this period. That's amazing for anybody to do that. Thank you. One thing I know, and you know, is Claire is Claire. It's never a secret where she stands, what she believes in, what she wants to see done, and how she wants to get there. This day and time, as we're watching our federal government unravel, we need people like Claire McCaskill in that Senate, trying to stay focused on the true values of our nation and the true importance of our political system. So let me introduce a friend of all of us, Senator Claire McCaskill.
All right. Woo! Woo! It is so great to be here, and I want to. John's probably sitting down somewhere has run out, but I do think I would love all of you to join me in recognizing somebody who, no matter what, no matter whether we're up or whether we're down, whether we're sideways, whether we're winning or whether we're losing, whether we're powerful or trying to try to be powerful, there's one constant up here for Democratic Days, and that's John Yancey, and I want to thank him from the bottom of my heart. Where are you, John? He's hiding. I'm proud of this room. There he is. There he is. There's John. There's John. Thank you, John. Thank you. The other thing I want to mention is what Bob just mentioned, which is frankly astounding to me. Now, I'm going to talk a little trash here, but there have been many, many times I've stood at this podium and I've looked out, and I can say this now because I'm one of you, I've seen a lot of gray. I worried about Democratic Days because I worried that the audience seemed to skew older, right? And I worried about whether or not we were nurturing and bringing along enough young people. If there were enough young people that were passionate about what's going on in this state and what's going on in this country to show up and be counted. And I want to tell you, you have put a spring in my step this morning for all these young people that are here today. Thank you very, very much. Now, I told some of you as I was walking around and saying hello to everyone that I've got bad news for you. Because guess what I did when I was your age? I started working on campaigns. And look what happened. So I do believe that there are a lot of candidates sitting at these tables with all these young people. And I want to personally invite each and every one of you to have more fun than you're ever going to have in your life by working on Team Claire this summer and into the fall. Deal? Deal? All right. Our campaigns specialize in warm beer and cold pizza. If you're 21. No beer if you're not 21. I want to, all of you in the back that are standing along the wall, this is the beginning of what's going to be a massive field organization in this state. We will have an office in Hannibal. We will have an office in Kirksville. We will have offices all over this state manned by a few staff and a whole lot of volunteers. So if you haven't given them your name and your phone number, I would ask you to do that before you leave here today. And let me just say about Lori and Bob Holden, what class act they are. And I was thinking about it as I was preparing for this morning, as I was traveling here. You know, we had 20 years of Democratic governors. 20 years. Mel Carnahan, Bob Holden, Jay Nixon. And I want you to know, in that 20 years, there was never a whiff of personal scandal. Right. These guys are in there for less than a year, and it's a mess. It's a mess. So I think we have a lot to be proud of Bob's legacy and the legacy of our other Democratic governors and the way they governed this state with integrity and character and the values that I think Missourians hold dear. So I wanted to recognize the Holdens for that. So let me talk first about a very simple question that I want everybody to answer between now and November. And that is, who are they looking after? Who are they looking after? You know, and really, isn't that what government's supposed to be about? Aren't you judged in government by who you look after? Are you looking after the least among us? Are you looking after job creation? Are you looking after families that can't afford to retire? And parents who can't afford to take care of their parents? And kids who can't afford to go to college and can't shoulder the burden of the student debt that results? Are you looking after them? Or are you looking after somebody else? And I want to talk about who they're looking after in three different examples. The first one is your health. Now, I traveled around this state doing town halls, and I must say that when I did town halls on the Affordable Care Act, they weren't as friendly as the ones I had last year. They were tough. But I didn't hide from it. I went out and tried to explain it, to make people understand what we were trying to do. We were trying to put some rules of the road on insurance companies. We were trying to change the status quo. And you know what the status quo was? Well, if you were sick, then you couldn't get insurance. If you'd been sick, you couldn't get insurance. If you didn't have insurance at work, you had nowhere to go to buy insurance where you could pool risk. The insurance companies could spend as much as they wanted figuring out how to hire more claims adjusters to deny your claim. There were no limits on how much they could spend on salaries and figuring out ways not to pay the claim. They could, all of a sudden, if you had a traumatic illness that was very expensive, the insurance companies could say, "You're done. You've reached your lifetime cap. We don't care if you're going to have this illness the rest of your life. We're done with you." We changed all of that. We changed all of that. And by the way, when we did it, there were some things that we could have fixed along the way. But oh no, the Republicans had a slogan that they were going to use. And they were going to run on it. And it was repeal and replace. Repeal and replace. Everywhere I went, I heard repeal and replace. Well, they took over. And guess what happened? Sabotage and undermine. There was no repeal. There was no replace. You know why there wasn't a replace? They couldn't figure out how to do it. They couldn't figure out how to do it. So they instead, they are just hoping you don't notice what they're doing. And that is, they're sabotaging those very protections that we put in place. And what they're going to do before this is all said and done, within the next few months, they're actually going to complete the task of allowing insurance companies once again to discriminate against you based on pre-existing conditions. We're going to go back to the bad old days, where insurance companies don't have rules of the road, insurance companies don't have the ability to play by rules that favor you. Instead, they're going to be able to do what's ever profitable for them.
Excuse me, Senator, could you hold the microphone? A lot of us are having trouble.
Sure. Thank you. Is that better?
Yeah.
Oh, bless your hearts. Should I start over? No, I'm kidding. I won't start over. I'm kidding. I basically said they're messing us around on health care. That's what you missed. So they're not looking after us when it comes to health care. They have cut, in the tax bill they passed, they cut Medicaid. They put 13 million people off insurance in the tax bill. They cut the subsidies that will be paid to help people that get subsidies when they buy insurance on the exchanges. And by the way, the interesting part about that is that every time somebody loses insurance, and we are now going backward, we are at an all-time low of how many uninsured there were in this country. Now that number is climbing. Every person who is uninsured, guess what that does? It makes your insurance more. Because they still show up at the hospital when they're sick, and we still give them care. But those costs are just passed along to everybody who has insurance. So what they're doing by denying people insurance is they're just making all of you pay more for it. And there's no end in sight. So they're not looking after you when it comes to health care. And also in that tax bill, and this is the thing that really burns me. If you saw the hearings, you probably saw me speaking softly and sweetly about this. They gave a windfall to insurance companies and pharmaceutical drug companies. A windfall. Now, since that windfall to the pharmaceutical drug companies, you know what the drug companies have all done? They've given $50 billion to their shareholders. And how many of them have dropped the price of one drug? Zippo. Instead, those drug prices just keep climbing. So think about the nerve. You get a windfall in a tax bill, you give $50 billion to your shareholders, and by the way, let's raise the prices of drugs again. Something's got to give. Something's got to give. Okay, so agriculture. Who are they looking after in agriculture? Well, the president kind of surprised everybody this week and said, we're going to start a trade war with Canada. Canada? Really? You know, the number one country we import steel and aluminum from is not China. China's only 8% of our steel. Our number one import of steel and aluminum is Canada. Now, does anybody want to tell me where we export number one, our beans and corn? That would be Canada. That would be Canada. That is the country, along with Mexico, that Missouri agriculture depends on. That's where we send our corn and beans. And everybody in this room, and if you don't know it, it means you traveled here from far away. But if you traveled less than an hour to get here, you know what the agricultural economy means to this state. You know that if we can't export our commodities, this state's in trouble. So don't ask me why it's a good idea for the United States to get in a trade war with Canada. You'd have to check in with the guy in the Oval Office. But I don't think Missouri agriculture is going to like it. And you should have heard all the Republican ag senators. They are on fire about it. I thought Pat Roberts was going to blow a gasket when he heard what had happened. Infrastructure. Now, the infrastructure plan, who are they looking after in the infrastructure plan? This was a little bit of a tricky thing that the president's trying to do on infrastructure. He says, well, you know, we're going to do $200 billion over 10 years. Now, keep in mind that's $20 billion a year of infrastructure for the whole country. By the way, that's less than what he wanted for his wall. Okay? So he wants that for the whole country. And he says the rest of it's going to be made up with private investment or local governments. Now, I don't know how much time he's spent in rural America. I know how much time I've spent in rural Missouri. And I'm pretty sure private companies are not going to toll the road between Hayti and Potosi. I do not believe that rural roads and bridges have the kind of traffic that make tolling, and that's all private investment is, you know. private companies don't invest in roads and bridges unless they get their money back. So he wants Trump tolls in Missouri, and you won't even have a chance to pay tolls in rural Missouri because no business would ever invest in the roads and bridges in rural Missouri. Well, he says, well, I'm going to fix that with a $50 billion set aside for rural communities. But guess what they didn't tell you? While you were hearing about this great $50 billion for rural Missouri, you didn't hear about what they did in the budget to rural Missouri. They cut more than $50 billion out of the budget for rural infrastructure programs, including rural broadband, sewer and water, USDA loans, all of the things that allow smaller communities in my state to have a chance to do capital investment. All of those programs got cut in their budget, more than $50 billion. So he's going over here in one hand, oh, I'm going to set aside $50 billion for you over 5 years, over 10 years. And over here he says, oh, I'm going to take $50 billion away from you over 10 years, more than $50 billion away from you. And he thinks he's doing you a favor. He's not looking after you. I just want you to know when you just, these, and I'm just touching on three things, on your health, on infrastructure, and then the final thing I want to talk about is public education. Now, I'm a product of public schools. I graduated from Hickman High School and undergrad at Mizzou and law school at Mizzou. And I didn't go to one of those, there you go, here's the Mizzou table. I didn't go to one of those fancy law schools. But I can keep up. You know, I can keep up. I got a lot. There's a lot of Harvard grads in the Senate, and I can keep up. I'm very proud of my public school education. And what I don't think the governor understands, and I know Betsy DeVos doesn't understand, is that in rural Missouri, public schools are the beating heart of the community. What I don't think the president gets, the governor is so busy on airplanes going everywhere to meet big important people in states other than Missouri, I don't know how much time he's spent out in rural Missouri. Have you guys seen him? But if he'd take the time to come out and learn about rural Missouri, he would understand that in most of my state, there aren't private schools. So if we're going to take money away from private schools for private school choice, it's going to come out of the pot of public schools. So all he's doing is shifting money away from rural Missouri to put it into the cities where there's private schools. Well, it doesn't sound like he's looking after folks that voted for him. Pretty sure it's rural Missouri that gave him those big margins. So you need to tell your friends. They need to understand that when it comes to the health care bill that they tried to push, rural people were going to pay twice as much. When it comes to infrastructure, you're getting left out. And when it comes to education, he doesn't understand that for rural Missouri, it is all about public education and making sure that we support public education. So the next time somebody talks to you about how much they love Donald Trump, give them the big three: public education, infrastructure, and health. And I'm pretty sure if you can talk them through it, we might have a chance to convince them that they could come over to our side and try it. So let me finish up by talking about who is probably going to be my opponent. Josh Hawley is the newly elected Attorney General of Missouri. Now, I watched that campaign pretty closely. And he had two main messages when he ran for Attorney General. The first message he had was that he wasn't like other politicians. He was never going to run for one office and turn around and then immediately run for another. He spent almost his entire campaign saying, I'm different. Remember his ad with all the ladders? That he would never climb the ladder right after he got elected. He was on radio interview after radio interview. You know, all these people, they're just looking at the next office. I'm not like that. I want to be Attorney General. Well, it didn't even take a year. And off he went. So that was the first thing he ran on that clearly he didn't mean. He just said what he thought you wanted to hear. He had no intention of not going as far and fast as he possibly could. The second thing he ran on was he was going to root out public corruption. Now, you know, he talked a lot about it. And by the way, his buddy, the other outsider, Eric Greitens, did the same thing. The two of them. They were going to ride into Jefferson City and they were going to clean up all that mess up there. All that ugly corruption and all that dirty, nasty stuff that went on with all those terrible politicians of both parties. So those are the two things he campaigned on. Now, how's he done on the public corruption? The first chance he had was when the governor admitted that he had violated the ethics laws with his charity. Now, guess who's in charge of looking at into charities and how they behave? Anybody want to guess who's in charge of that in the state of Missouri? That would be the Attorney General. So the governor pleads guilty to an ethics violation, and does Josh Hawley step up and go, okay, we're looking into this charity? Oh no, he lay low. Doesn't say a word about the charity. That was his first chance. Now later, now, when a real prosecutor is flooding the zone with subpoenas and investigators, he sits up all of a sudden and goes, well, I'm looking into the charity. Now I'm looking into the charity. Kind of shamed into it. Second chance he had. His biggest donor, and when I say biggest donor, I'm saying biggest donor. Now, I don't even know what this would be like. I have never run a race that didn't have campaign finance limits. Every race I've run, I never was in that place where I was running for an office in Missouri when there were no limits, which we had for a while, right? We had it last election in Missouri. Nobody had limits in the statewide elections in 2016. So when I say his biggest donor, I'm talking about somebody who stroked a check for over $3 million. Almost 80% of Josh Hawley's campaign fund came from one guy. Now, I don't even know what that would be like. That's bizarre. So what happens? Now remember, he ran on public corruption. We find out that his biggest donor gave a check to a member of the legislature who then within days filed legislation to help that donor's business. Now surely at that moment, the public corruption attorney general steps up and says, well, I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. Oh no, he made excuses. Well, I just don't think I have jurisdiction. He had jurisdiction when he was running. He told everybody in Missouri that was gonna be his job. But oh no, he looked the other way. That was his second chance. Strike three was actually, not only did he not look into the activities of the governor when he had a chance, but he did an investigation that he announced the results of with a few days ago. Now, I was a prosecutor for a long time. I know what investigations look like. The Attorney General is actually telling Missourians that he investigated the governor's use of a tool to hide information from the public, and that he found no wrongdoing. Now, let's like look at what this investigation was. I'm not kidding now, I'm telling you the truth. You know what his investigation was? They wandered over and talked to some of the governor's staff, and the governor's staff said they didn't do anything wrong. You think I'm kidding? That was it. That was it. Well, what do you expect him to say? What do you think, is Perry Mason? They were going to fall on the floor and confess? So not only does he not really do an investigation, at a minimum, he should have said, I cannot complete an investigation because A, the governor refuses to talk to me. So I can't tell the people of Missouri if a law has been broken. I can't tell if there is bad things going on in connection with the use of this technology tool. But instead, he gives the report to the governor, not to the public, and the governor puts out a press release he's been cleared of all wrongdoing. This is something, guys. Now, that is not the way you go after public corruption. That is not an investigation. There were no forensics done on any of the devices. There was no attempt to try to force the governor to give information about how, what he had utilized. Now, he wants a raise now. He wants a bigger job. And it's our job, together, to make sure we keep some balance in Missouri, to make sure that we have a check, to make sure that we are not gonna fall off the side of the cliff with one party in charge of everything, especially when you look at how they're handling the responsibilities they've been given. So, what I need everybody to do to decide that this is the year, and I need all of you today, to think about what you're gonna do between now and November. And I need you to write it down, what you're going to do. Are you going to give an hour a week volunteering? Are you going to run for something? Are you going to talk to people about registering to vote? Are you going to find two or three friends that you're not sure where they are in politics and just have a friendly conversation and see if you can find common ground and convince them that balance matters, that having two parties is important to our democracy. And if our state has only one party, there's nobody to check and balance. I hope that you decide this is the year you do more than you've ever done before. I can tell you I'm gonna work harder than I've ever worked before, and I think all of you know I work pretty damn hard. So you'll never outwork me, but I want everybody to try to commit to working as hard as you possibly can. To make a difference. We're gonna have a lot of good candidates on the ground. We're gonna have a lot of volunteers working, and I need everybody to be a part of it. Because you know what they're saying, all these talking heads in Washington? Same thing they said in 2006, same thing they said in 2012. She can't win. She can't win. Guess what? We're gonna win. We're gonna win. Now, when I was a young prosecutor, I'm going to close with this and then I get to do a great introduction. When I was a young prosecutor, I was the only woman in the office in Kansas City as an assistant. For a period of time, I was the only one. And all the men cussed. And I thought I needed to cuss to fit in. You know, I was trying to get assigned a big case. I wanted to do the murder cases. I wanted to do the big A felonies. I wanted to have the trials. You know, and I was trying to fit in and be one of the guys, and so I just cussed up a blue streak. And finally, one of the older lawyers in the office came over to me and they said, you know, Claire, it is really bad, your mouth. You know, you just really shouldn't be cussing like that. And he put a swear jar on my desk. And every time I said a bad word, he made me put a dollar in it. And he cured me. I quit cussing. I mean, every once in a while I do, but... mostly about Republicans, no. I quit cussing. So I've noticed since November of 2016 that when I used to walk through the grocery store, people would walk up to me and go, hi, Claire. Now they grab me, help us, save us. You know, there's this sense of urgency that people are just like grabbing me and saying, you must do something for us. So I know how much oxygen is being consumed talking about Donald Trump. I know that almost every day somebody comes up to you and says, well, what about the porn star? Well, what about Jared's loans? Well, what about, you know, the classified information? And, you know, somebody is talking to you about him every day. And every time that happens, I need you to tell them about the Trump swear jar. We've got a Trump swear jar that every time anybody complains about Donald Trump, you got to put $5 in the swear jar. And it's located at ClaireMcCaskill.com. $5. Every time anybody complains about Donald Trump. I will tell you on that front, something amazing is happening. We have over 110,000 donors to our campaign. And 90% of those checks are under $100.
Wow.
So we've got an average contribution right now. Our average contribution is $64. I am so proud of that. So when you hear all this malarkey, they're gonna say, oh, Claire's out getting all her money from Hollywood and getting all her money from New York. Just say no. 90% of her checks are less than $100. My average contribution is $64. You know what his is? Over $1,500. I'm pretty sure he's hanging different places than I am. I'm pretty sure he's looking after somebody different than I'm looking after. So, I hope that you all will spread the word about the Trump Square Jar and that you'll get really involved in my campaign. I am always honored to be here, and now I get to introduce somebody who I think is special. And I've got some credibility about being able to judge this, because I know what it's like to be state auditor. I even know what it's like to run for state auditor. In fact, in 1998, I was standing right here trying to get people to vote for me for state auditor. So I get this job, and I get how important it is. But I got to tell you, it was never as important when I had it as it is now, because she's the only one in Jefferson City that is trying to look at things regardless of which party is involved. She is the one trying to make sure that your government is behaving well, is not wasting your money, that there's not nonsense going on, and she doesn't care whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. She's doing it by the book. And boy, do we need that now. Isn't that a breath of fresh air right now? Somebody who's doing it by the book. She needs your help. They're coming for her. They don't want anybody in Jefferson City to be a Democrat. And I think it's pretty important that we have an auditor that is. So I hope all of you, while you're given some time to help me get reelected, I hope you also give her time, give her your energy. She deserves it. It's important for our state. And I'm very proud of the job she's doing. Nobody has done a more professional or thorough job as state auditor than my friend and your state auditor, and hopefully soon to be reelected as state auditor, Nicole Galloway.